Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Adrift at sea for 3 days, Tesca and Giacomo weigh their chances when the ship that has discovered them turns out to be the Osprey, the Fane's unofficial flagship. Chapter 7. When the Osprey was less than 100 yards off, Tesca and Giacomo saw a man in the bow raise a speaking trumpet to his lips.
"Ahoy, lost souls!"
Giacomo laughed at that and cupped his hands around his mouth.
"Ahoy, finder of lost souls! Be you havin' room for 2 more?
The voice came back, amused.
"That we may! Stand by!"
The ship adjusted her course, angling to pass close by the raft and trimming more sail to cut her speed. Tesca and Giacomo watched the Osprey's crew hang a climbing net over the rail, the bottom of it splashing into the water. They split the remaining strips of meat between them and ate them quickly, using the last of the rainwater to wash them down. Then, as the Osprey was some 15 feet or so away from the raft, the 2 men leapt into the sea and started swimming. Tesca was alarmed at how slow his limbs seemed to move through the water, and for a moment he feared that he wouldn't reach the net before the Osprey had gone past. But he gritted his teeth and increased his speed, grabbing the trailing corner of the net. Giacomo was already halfway up the net before he paused, making sure Tesca had pulled himself out of the water before he completed his climb. Tesca dragged himself up in slow but steady pursuit. Several hands, Giacomo's included, took hold of him and hoisted him over the rail. His legs buckled as he was set down on the deck, and Giacomo eased him into a sitting position. He hung his head down at his knees, as much out of weariness as to keep his face hidden. Through the hair in front of his face, he saw shuffling bare feet and heard a set of boots striding in their direction. The shuffling feet parted.
"Doing the daughter's work this day, we are. If there were profit in rescuing men from the abyss, I could retire."
"Many thanks to you, Captain," Giacomo said. "We be from the Windchaser."
"The Windchaser, eh?"
There was a moment's silence. Tesca wondered if he'd picked a bad name.
"Where were you bound?"
"Maipo. A storm be coming up suddenly. She be sweeping man and cargo into the sea. We 2 be just getting that raft together when a wave be taking us off the deck. We be drifting for 3 days.
3 days,
came the captain's voice. Tesca lifted his gaze slightly, taking in a pair of polished black boots in front of Giacomo's bare feet. One of the boots tapped the deck, its owner thinking.
"Lucky lads you are, no mistake. Been seeing flotsam here and there since dawn. Realized someone around here's had a bad time."
There was a pause. Tesca guessed the captain was looking the pair of them over.
"So, the Windchaser, you say?"
"Aye, Captain, out of Vinderel."
"Not the Le Rouge?"
Tesca felt Giacomo stiffen in surprise. The tall islander had many talents, but deception wasn't one of them.
Le Rouge?" Giacomo stammered. Why you be saying that?"
"Oh, just that we already plucked another fellow out of the ocean before we spotted your raft. Not so lucky as you with your raft, he was. We found him clinging to a barrel, and that's no mean trick for him, given that he's only got 6 fingers.
That brought a laugh from the crew. Tesca could feel Giacomo's unease.
"Maybe you can tell us more than he's saying," the captain went on.
"Wait," Tesca muttered, raising his head slowly to peer up at the captain. He recognized him, though the 2 had never met. Tesca had observed him through a spyglass on more than one occasion. Tobias Kern, he recalled, mentally paging through Galen's file on the man. An experienced captain, dependable, does as he's told. Not much imagination, though. Another reason the Fanes keep him on their payroll. He struggled to his feet, sensing the time had come for a bold move, before Giacomo's hesitation made the captain even more suspicious.
6 fingers, you say?
Aye, Kern replied. You know him?
He seemed surprised that Tesca would admit to such a thing.
I think so, Tesca replied. Can I see him?
Kern was thrown off by Tesca's request.
Aye,
he replied with a surprised shrug, gesturing to the other side of the ship. Giacomo helped Tesca move in that direction as the sailors sidled out of their way. They found their fellow wastrel sitting on a crate next to the opposite rail, huddled under a blanket. He was drinking a steaming cup of broth, the aroma making Tesca's mouth water. But Tesca's attention was drawn to the man's hands. His right hand gripped the cup firmly, all 5 fingers visible, while his left, which supported the cup from beneath, only had a thumb remaining to it. The man's narrow eyes, visible over the rim of the cup, flicked up to Tesca and Giacomo in quick succession, flaring open in recognition for a fraction of a second. Then the man was lowering the cup, revealing the lean, weathered face and scraggly beard Tesca had seen once before on the quarterdeck of the Le Rouge moments before she sank beneath the waves.
"Renee!" Tesca called, crossing to clap Sidois on the shoulder. "I knew a tough old bird wouldn't let the sea take him. Giacomo didn't think anyone else made it off the Wind Chaser."
He glanced back at Giacomo, who had also recognized the pirate, but was utterly baffled at Tesca's behavior.
"I win the bet, Giacomo. Come on, say it. Who's right?"
Giacomo's puzzled expression shifted, suddenly understanding Tesca's intentions. He laughed.
"You be right, Travis. Giacomo should be knowing better than to be making a wager with you."
He put a little too much emphasis on the name for Tesca's taste, but it had the effect Tesca had been hoping for. Sidois set down his mug, his seamed face breaking into an astonished grin.
"Travis," he called, gripping Tesca's arm with apparent enthusiasm, "and Giacomo!"
He laughed, sounding genuinely exultant.
"Sacre mère, mes amis! When the Winchester went down, I thought I was the only one to survive, but the daughter has heard my prayers."
Captain Kern cleared his throat.
"You've found your voice at last, have you?"
Sidois turned to the captain.
Yes, seeing these old friends once more has restored my wits. After so many days floating alone out there, I was as one already dead."
Kern seemed to be accepting this.
"Well, given your age and your, hands, some here thought..."
He broke off for a moment.
"Seems far-fetched, really."
No, Captain," the pirate urged. "What was it?"
Kern looked embarrassed.
"Well, some of the crew thought you might be... Sidois."
Sidois's weary, friendly expression instantly twisted into a snarl.
"Sidois!" he shouted, turning his head to spit over the railing. "May the sun shrivel his balls! You thought I was Sidois!"
Kern leaned back reflexively from the outburst.
"Well, you do have only 6 fingers.
Tesca sighed, putting a hand on Sidois's shoulder.
Renee, it's all right."
He looked at Kern.
"Sidois doesn't have only 6 fingers, Captain. He's called that because of how many fingers he leaves his victims with."
"Vraiment!" the pirate snapped, surging to his feet. "Look at what that cochon did to me!"
He raised his maimed hand high for all to see before he allowed Tesca to guide him back to the crate he had been sitting on.
"I curse that man," Sidois muttered. "May he have a son who murders him."
Tesca began to sense that this ploy just might work.
"It's all right, Renee."
Captain Kern seemed eager to move past this moment.
"All right, lads," he called out. 3 lost souls rescued in 1 day, an extra ration of grog for all, and a full silver for any man that spots any more poor wretches out there."
The sailors cheered at that.
"But for now, back to work."
He turned to the first mate.
"Get us back on course, Mr. Spavey, if you please."
He turned back to Tesca, Sidois, and Giacomo, who had come to stand with them.
"Then get some blankets and broth for our 2 newest arrivals.
Sidois bobbed his head in respect.
"Merci, Captain. I must apologize for my outburst."
"It's, quite understandable," Kern replied. "Welcome aboard, then."
Sidois chuckled after Kern had moved off. He said nothing more while a crewman brought out blankets and mugs of steaming broth for Tesca and Giacomo. Once the pair had settled themselves down on the crate next to him, the pirate patted Tesca's arm with his maimed hand. He grinned, looking for all the world like a man glad to be reunited with his friends.
"Truly, the daughter smiles upon all her children. Why, if you had not come along, Travis, I can only imagine what might have befallen me."
He lifted his hand, holding it between them. Tesca could see the 4 puckered stumps, cut off in a perfect line nearly even with the top of his palm.
"When the crew beheld this, I realized I might be in for some trouble."
Then he put the hand down on Tesca's forearm, the man's unaccompanied thumb making a surprisingly strong grip. Sidois's eyes locked with Tesca's.
"It is curious, is it not, how much trouble a left hand can bring?"
Tesca nodded.
"I could not agree more.
Perhaps it would be best for all if such a thing were avoided."
"D'accord,"
Sidois said with a genial nod, breaking eye contact to look up at Giacomo.
"And you, my young friend, you're looking far better than I remember. Hardly the worse for wear."
His gaze traveled to the scar on Giacomo's shoulder.
"How did you survive?"
For a moment, Giacomo looked as if he wanted to hurl Sidois over the rail. but then he remembered that they were all supposed to be old friends.
Giacomo Nobinoin, he finally said, his smile only a pale imitation of his normal grin.
Ah, o mister, the pirate replied with a smile, but in the father's wisdom, he does not give us mysteries we cannot solve in time.
Tesco raised an eyebrow at that as he sipped his broth, enjoying the heat spreading out through his body. He was grateful for that and the blanket as well. The ocean had been colder than he'd expected.
Well, we're on our way. Somewhere, he thought. Not the ship I would have picked if I'd had a choice, but it's better than the raft. We just stay busy, blend in with the crew, and when the Osprey arrives in a port, we find a ship heading for Maipur. He paused, drinking more of his broth. Now, if she's actually going to Maipur, that would be a real stroke of luck. I'd almost start believing in Giacomo's winds if that happened.
Next to him, Sidois had begun querying Giacomo about what had happened aboard the Wind Chaser, adding his own details as well, as if he'd been in another part of the ship when the storm hit. Tesca suppressed a smile. A good way to get our stories straight. As the crew becomes more comfortable with us, they'll start asking their own questions about the Wind Chaser. Like as not they'd take notice if Giacomo said the ship had 3 masts, while Sidois said she had 2. Good idea. I should have thought of that. He chuckled and drank down the last of his broth. You'd think the old pirates had to do this sort of thing before. Movement out of the corner of his eye alerted him that a group of figures were crossing the deck, heading in their direction. He dropped his head, letting his hair fall into his face as 4 pairs of boots stopped in front of him. One pair he recognized as Kern's, but the pair that stood closest were black, polished, and very expensive. In fact, Tesca recognized the style of boot, Dorona, one of the finest craftsmen in Kohane, which meant he also knew who the owner of the boots was.
These 3, snapped Ambrose Fane. These are what you wasted half the day pulling out of the sea.
A bit of charity such as this, sir?
Well, it's good for morale,
the captain began to explain.
Charity, Ambrose broke in. You offer the gracious gift on your own time, Kern, not while commanding one of our ships.
There was a long pause after that.
Don't say much, do they?
3 days lost at sea would take the gab out of most any man, Kern offered.
Ambrose grumbled at that.
Which of them did you think was Sidois?
He stepped past Tesca, following Kern's gesture, and grabbed Sidois's arms, pulling them up to look at the hands. Tesca stared at the deck, waiting, gathering his strength for one explosive action. Grab Ambrose, get a knife to his throat, he decided. He'll certainly have a private cabin, drag him back there and hold him as a hostage until we reach Maipur. Best option I've got.
My father's met Sidois,
Ambrose bragged, studying the pirate's face.
You've the right number of years and digits, he said, laughing at his own joke, and your Malakin. That's a lot of coincidences, isn't it?
It is not my fault that Sidois chose to take my fingers, monsieur, and as for my age and my nation, they are as the triad gave to me.
Ambrose snorted.
My father says there's several folk out there who'd pay well for Sidois's body, and double that if he's still alive.
He leaned in close, looking for any reaction on Sidois's face.
Malakin Royal Navy for one, but there's others. Mother Mona? The Shah of Jalil?
Sidois's expression did not change. Ambrose frowned as he straightened up.
Perhaps I'll just keep you close until I get home and let father identify you himself, shall I?
By all means, monsieur, Sidois told him. Your ship has plucked me from the abyss. I am at your mercy. I do hope your father will be amused by the supposed resemblance I have to the cochon who maimed me, and that he will not consider this jest a waste of his time.
Ambrose's boots shifted on the deck. Tesca sensed the man's doubt growing.
Well, it's not like you're going anywhere, is it? And these other 2?
Friends of mine, monsieur, from the Windchaser, a late ship. A 2-masted sloop she was, out of Venderel, bound for Maipur.
Fine, fine,
Ambrose replied, sounding impatient and, Tesca thought, disappointed.
We saved your sorry lives. You can join the crew and work off that debt.
A fair trade, monsieur, Sidois replied. We shall be glad for the chance to repay you.
Damn right you will, Ambrose muttered. Kern, find some work for these 3. The Osprey's not a passenger ship.
At once, sir, Kern replied.
Tesca began to relax as Ambrose spun on his heel and stomped away. He risked raising his head and saw Ambrose heading for the hatch leading below deck, Kern and a very young man with a bird's nest of blonde hair in his wake. Cabin boy, Tesca decided.
Wait, weren't there 4 of them?
An instant later, a heavy fist slammed into the back of his head, knocking him to the deck. This attack was followed up by a pair of strong hands closing about his throat. Stars whirled in front of his eyes as the hands began to tighten, throttling him. Tesca heard Giacomo call out in surprise and anger as he leaped to Tesca's defense, tackling Tesca's assailant. There was a flurry of activity as members of the crew fell upon them, pulling them apart. As they were hauled to their feet, Ambrose and Kern were standing before them, both men shocked and furious.
"What in the hells is going on?" Ambrose demanded.
"Will spotted him," said the man who'd attacked Tesca.
Recognizing the voice, Tesca turned his head to see Garrick Cabot staring back at him. The man's eyes were wide, glaring at Tesca with a blazing hate, but the rest of his face was slack, his mouth hanging slightly open.
"He tried to disguise himself, but Will's too sharp for that, ain't you, Will?"
Cabot went on in that same low, almost muttering tone. He shook himself free of the two crewmen holding him and raised one arm to point at Tesca.
"It's the left hand."
Ambrose reacted as if someone had stuck him with a pin, bounding back a step, colliding with the cabin boy who was standing just behind him and knocking the youth to the deck. As the lad scrambled back to his feet, Tesca noticed something odd about him that seemed out of place, something about the way he moved, but he didn't have time to identify what it was before Ambrose barked an order.
"Hold him up straight!"
As Tesca's face was revealed, Ambrose's eyes went wide. For an instant, he looked as if he'd been struck across the back of the head with an oar.
"Sons balls," he breathed. "Tesca Sicarius."
Then a slow smile spread across his face.
"So Maipur was the right choice after all."
Tesca deliberately looked past Ambrose towards Captain Kern. "So, Captain, which of the watches will I be joining?" As a few chuckles passed through the crew, Ambrose surged forward and punched Tesca in the face. He sneered as Tesca sagged in the grip of the crewman.
"Not so tough after a few days on a raft, eh? Oh, I'm going to enjoy this."
He glanced over his shoulder to the cabin boy.
"Fetch a bird. We'll tell Father the good news straight away."
The youth nodded and scampered down a ladder that led into the hold. Tesca noted the boy's departure, seeing more clearly now what it was that had drawn his attention before. Ambrose turned to Kern.
"We're still close enough to the quad that a pigeon reached there, yes?"
"I believe so, sir."
"Good, good," Ambrose said, looking at Tesca. "All of our ships carry a few pigeons now. Good for getting word back home when they're not too far from the quad, eh?"
"I suppose so," Tesca replied.
Ambrose continued to look at him with a wide-eyed expression, unable to believe his luck.
"So," he asked with a sly grin, "who's Jordan?"
"Who?" Tesca asked, showing no outward reaction, though inwardly he felt a chill run through him.
"Play coy all you like," Ambrose sneered. "We'll get that answer out of you. Like you wouldn't know about the message your elf was carrying? Aye, we know about that message. Hell, Sicarius, we know everything your precious duke and the old spider were planning. What do you make of that?"
Tesca said nothing, but as the cabin boy returned from below, carefully carrying a small wooden cage, his mind was whirling with activity. "Ambrose doesn't know everything," he concluded. "He doesn't know who Jordan is. He just knows the name." He watched the cabin boy set the wooden cage down on the deck and produce writing materials from a satchel slung over his shoulder. Tesca suppressed a smile as Ambrose began writing his message.
"Always a little too hasty, Ambrose."
It was the one quality that, in Tesca's opinion, kept Ambrose from being as formidable as his father or sister. Neither Draxon nor Allie would ever have given away such a valuable piece of information right at the start. "That doesn't mean he isn't dangerous," he reminded himself. He'd always thought of Ambrose, even from the first moment they'd met, as a sort of overgrown terrier, quick to bark, nearly as quick to bite, and relentless in his pursuit of something he wanted. "He's willing to dig up 1,000 rose gardens to catch one rat," Tesca had once told Galen, a description that had made the right hand laugh. "That may be true, lad, but remember, it never ends well for the rat." Tesca resigned himself to the likelihood that the next several days were going to be extremely painful, perhaps even his last. "The longer I can hold out against his questions," he resolved, "the better chance Kerla has to complete the mission. Perhaps I can get him to reveal more about what he knows and how he knows it." Ambrose finished his message and shoved it into the cabin boy's outstretched hands. But Tesca noticed something. As Ambrose turned towards his new captives, The cabin boy quickly opened Ambrose's message and read it for himself before wrapping it around the pigeon's leg for delivery. The youth glanced up, saw Tesca watching him, and turned away to finish preparing the pigeon for release. Tesca braced himself for further questions from Ambrose, but the man stepped past him to stand in front of Giacomo.
"What ship were you on?" Ambrose demanded.
"De Winches," Giacomo began, but Ambrose's hand flashed out, slapping Giacomo across the face.
"I hear that lie again, you're going over the side," Ambrose promised. "What ship? The Cutlass?"
Giacomo flinched.
"Ah,"
Ambrose barked.
"It was, wasn't it? The Cutlass! Father was right again!"
He looked back to Sidois.
"So, if he's the left hand, are you still telling me you're not Sidois?"
The old pirate lifted his head, looking Ambrose in the eye, but gave no other reply.
"Get all three of them below," Ambrose snarled.
"You said we could have him," muttered Garrick Cabot. "Him and the elf bitch. You said we could."
It was the lack of emotion in Garrick's voice, Tesca decided, that was the most disturbing thing about him. His eyes were wide with fury and passion, but it was the only part of him that seemed to show any life at all. The voice was flat, almost dead.
"And you will," Ambrose snapped as he waved Garrick off, sounding exasperated. "But not until I get my answers, clear?"
Garrick said nothing more and simply followed Ambrose and the crew down into the hold, his stare fixed on Tesca. Tesca had never been on board the Osprey before, though he'd studied the ship from a distance on several occasions. The crew hustled him, Sidois and Giacomo, down into the very bowels of the ship, arriving in a low space just above the bilges, only 3 feet or so high. One section of this space had been divided into 3 small cells with metal bars, making pens suitable for storing smaller animals like goats or sheep, or people.
"In you go," Ambrose said. "Should be just enough room for each of you in one of those."
Giacomo shook himself loose of the crewmen holding him, then with a sour glare at Ambrose, clambered into one of the cramped spaces, sitting down with his back against the hull. Sidois followed suit, taking the middle space. Ambrose leaned in close to Tesca.
"Last in, first out, Sicarius. You won't be in there long, however. I've got to get a few things ready. Then we'll continue our chat in my cabin."
"Can't wait," Tesca replied as he entered the last space. Ambrose shut the door built into the bars and locked it. There was no room for anyone to comfortably stand guard next to them, so Ambrose stationed a crewman at the top of the ladder that was the only way out. The 3 captives heard Ambrose's boots on the deck as he strode away.
"Aside from that last unfortunate turn of events," Sidois said in a low voice, "I feel our deception went rather well."
Tesca couldn't help but laugh.
"At least now we have a chance to speak openly."
"Vraiment?" came the reply.
"So," Tesca asked, "is it true that you've met Drax and Fane, like Ambrose says?"
"Mais oui, it has been a good 10 years since then, but he will most certainly recognize me."
He raised his left hand and wiggled the lone digit.
"I am rather memorable, am I not?"
"He be selling you to the highest bidder, too?" Giacomo asked.
"Without a doubt. Our last business arrangement ended poorly."
He sighed and glanced at Tesca.
"So, mon ami, I am most curious. How did you manage to fire that last broadside through?"
Giacomo laughed and would have made a reply if Tesca hadn't shaken his head sharply. Sidois looked disappointed.
"Ah, surely it is all academic now? What use could I make of such information down here?"
"We won't be down here forever, will we?" Tesca said. "I'm sure Ambrose will have questions for you as well." Sidois smiled.
"Are you implying that Le Donfant Fane might find your unspoken answer interesting, perhaps even valuable?"
The old pirate chuckled.
"As you will."
There was a long silence in the cell before he spoke again.
"Of course, there is also the terrible strangeness that occurred afterward, the ship coming to life around us, and men dying from the simplest scratch."
He looked at Giacomo.
"Except for you."
Giacomo shivered at that, seeming to fold in on himself.
"How is your shoulder?" Sidois asked.
"Enough," Tesca warned him.
Sidois shrugged.
"As you wish. I am certain that once Ambrose is done asking questions of you, he will invite me to his cabin for a similar chat."
He gave Tesca a fierce grin.
"It is likely that he will find my speculations upon the fate of the Le Rouge most interesting."
Tesca nodded. "You could do that. Or the three of us could agree that it's in all our best interests to say as little as possible to Ambrose. By sticking together, we might all stay alive long enough to find a way off this ship. He smiled back at Sidoine. Or do you really think that the Thanes won't sell you off either way? Sidoine sighed.
No, you make a most compelling argument, monsieur.
A few minutes later, they heard the sound of footsteps approaching, then Ambrose came down the ladder.
Time to go, Sicarius. Hope you've taken this time to come up with answers to those questions I have.
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.